My name is Dr. Robert Hanson. I got a
PhD in acoustic comfort from University College London, and I also qualified as a barrister in 1996 with Lincoln's Inn. And most of the past 20, 25 years, I've been living in Hong Kong, but I've been in England now for about 7, 8 months. And this week, there was a case, for me, quite a significant case, a judicial review of the government's decision not to inform the public about the health risks or possible health risks associated with the rollout of 5G. And this case was held on Monday the 6th and Tuesday the 7th of February. It was the Royal Courts of Justice. It was a judicial review. It was in front of a judge called Lady Justice Mary Stacey. And the case was brought by Action Against 5G. Their barrister was Michael Mansfield, KC, King's Counsel, as they're now called. And that's what really, that's the case I spent some time observing this week.
Okay, can you get into a bit of the nitty-gritty, Robert, of how the judicial review was run? So, in other words, what were the main points that the... Michael Mansfield was making to the judge?
Oh, the two main points. Actually, was limited in what he could actually discuss by the Court of Appeal, because actually even to get to the judicial review was a big fight in the first place, and they had to go to the Court of Appeal to even get the review. But there are two arguments that Michael Mansfield was putting forward. The first one was that the government failed in its duty to provide adequate information to the public about the risks and how, if possible, it might be possible for individuals to minimise or avoid the risks of 5G technology. So that was the first part of his argument. And the second part of the nub of this was the failure by the government to provide adequate reasons for not trying to investigate or even look into the adverse health effects of 5G technology, and then failure to monitor any of these risks, and simply they were accused of not being transparent. And what was quite significant about this case, there was a group of people, it's called the Chiswick Group, but there are other groups, and once a 5G mast or a series of 5G masts had been installed close to their home, they became ill, but they actually got real physical symptoms, such as blisters on their tongues, and the clear reddening of the skin. Because up to date, most people have tried to argue that, you're imagining that you're feeling ill with 5G. But in this case, it was quite clear that the real physical symptoms of being close to 5G. But of course, the government's argument was, well, this could be, there's no causation between your illness and 5G. That's the government's position. And the government's position is that there's no risk at all. And because there's no risk, you don't have to inform people about the risks. So the government's saying, hey, 5G is safe. There's no risk at all with it. And because there's no risk, we don't have to worry about any risks.
Now, just to stop you for a second, this is surprising to hear that the government appear to be putting the mobile phone telecoms industry's case for them. I would have expected that that you would find campaigners up against not the government but against the industry that wants to install these masts.
Yeah, but it's the government. It's because it's the government that allows them to take place, that the government is responsible for allowing these things to be installed. And the government said, yes, you can go ahead and install them because we think they're safe. There's no risk attached to them. And what the government actually did, it brought a series of reports. And these reports have actually been commissioned by what are called NGOs, non-governmental organizations. However, these different organizations, I'm going to quickly run through them in a minute, are actually funded by government money and industry money. So I detect a slight conflict of interest here in terms of the government wants the policy for 5G, because the government does want 5G for many reasons. And
well, not least of which is that they make money from the licensing of these frequencies.
But there is money obviously going into the government coffers, but it also allows for instantaneous collection of information, which governments can use for various things, for many, many things. So the government does like to collect information quickly, speedily, and 5G is quite essential for that. It is faster than 4G if you're doing collecting information on a very, very large scale. At home, you wouldn't notice a lot of difference, but on a big scale, it would be quite different. So what the government produced was a series of reports by ICNA, which is the International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation, by SHINA, which is the Scientific Committee on Emerging and Newly Identified Health Risks, and another one by SHIA, which is the Scientific Committee on Health and Energy Risks. And these so-called reports said that, there's no provable adverse effects, or it's unlikely to have any adverse effects of EMFs. But Mansfield argued, well, actually, unlikely means that there is a risk. And I will give you some of my own examples here. For example, in the past, the United Nations International Panel on Climate Change went about saying that after 2000, it's unlikely to have snow. But yet we had snow this year. And with vaccine injuries, the United Nations World Health Organization said it was unlikely to be any injuries from this mRNA injection, but yet there were injuries from the injection, and yet snow has fallen after the year 2000. So unlikely doesn't mean that something is safe or something's not going to happen. And Michael Mansfield's argument was actually it's wrong for the government to give this impression of no risk when even these scientific bodies will not say there is no risk. The only thing they'll go as far as saying is there's no provable adverse effects, which is quite different than saying there is no risk. And what Michael Mansfield was arguing was that the government should be informing people of the potential risks of 5G, and it should be making clear to the public what these risks actually are, and it should continually monitor these risks. Now, there is a big difference actually between 4G and 5G. 4G tended to spread the waves very wide and broadly, didn't have a big focused beam on it, whereas 5G is a more focused beam. I mean, I could draw analogies with different types of light bulb. If you take the incandescent light bulb, it spreads light very evenly. If you take an LED light bulb, it comes at you like a laser. And the best example of that is a Porsche motor car from the last 5 years, where you've got the round light, and you imagine a square box in there, and a big LED diode at each corner of the square, and it comes at you like a laser beam. That's what a 5G does. Whereas a 4G spreads it more like a halogen. And because the light's coming at you in a direct beam, just as a 5G comes at you in a direct beam, if you get a few of these towers together, the amount of energy directed at a human being, if you've got many towers in an area, can be quite severe. And that's...
Let's just clarify this a bit, because you seem to be implying that the mast is intelligently picking up the exact location of the phone it's trying to communicate with and focusing its beam of microwaves directly towards that phone. So that, I mean, you can see that this might actually be quite a good way of saving energy. So you're not distributing, like, say, a radio signal from a radio tower would be in all directions. It's just towards the phone and the phone alone.
Actually, the 5G uses a lot more energy than the 4G. It's significantly more. It's at least a quarter, 25% more energy for a 5G than a 4G, the way they work. But the problem is it's a more intense energy, it's a more intense beam of energy. And that's what is potentially causing the illnesses. So nobody is willing to say there is no risk, and yet the government is not willing to say what these risks might be, even though these scientific bodies do say there may possibly be risks, such as dizziness, headaches, skin rashes, eye problems, which in effect this Chiswick group actually had those very specific symptoms.
So how does the 5G, or maybe even if you're right next to a 4G mast, how does it actually affect the body? Do we know?
All this is not 100% crystal clear. But what it will do is it can irritate the skin and it can irritate the eyes. And by causing a burning sensation on the skin or somehow impacting on the eye. And that's with the eye thing, that's what I feel quite a lot. I mean, I feel this quite personally with mobile phones of any kind, and also with LED lighting of any kind. And again, drawing the parallels with this, with the LED lighting, because they are very, very similar. The same bodies, the Shiner and the Scientific Committee on Health and Energy Risks, were the ones used to justify banning the incandescent light bulb and promoting the LED light bulb. But, you know, I'm very interested in lighting. And there was a Dr. John Hawke from King's University in London, and he went to visit the Scientific Committee on Emerging Newly Identified Health Risks, Shiner. This was going back in time a bit, in 2011. And after Shiner had used the same phrase for 5G, i.e. no provable adverse effects, at the meeting with Shiner, and he's now Professor John Hawke from King's, recorded the whole thing, the whole conversation, and I've got it word for word, quote for quote. And he said, it seemed to me that Shiner, the committee, the UK representatives, and I were all of a similar mind concerning the potentially adverse effects of LED and CFL lighting. The representatives, three lighting experts from Philips, tried to modify the overall opinion slightly towards suggesting less harm, but they were not hugely adamant. The overall feeling of the meeting was that the lamps had a number of potentially adverse effects, mostly for abnormal photosensitive subjects, but also somewhat for normal ones on both skin and eye. It's exactly the same as the 4G, 5G argument, and exactly the same effects. Shiner committee members also suggested that the incandescent lamps may not be particularly more wasteful of energy than the CFLs. So what we have this repeated pattern with light bulbs, with COVID mRNA injections, and with 5G, where you have this body of so-called scientific opinion that don't say something's absolutely safe, but use the standard phrase, no provable adverse effects. And this allows governments to select, manipulate evidence, obscure the full picture, and prevent the public from making informed, rational decisions. And that has been the big problem, really, for government, from, as I say, the ban on the light bulb to the mRNA injections and 5G. There are problems with all these things, and yet the public are just not being informed about them.
Well, I mean, it's a good opportunity this week for those who are concerned around the UK, maybe even from other countries, about the effects of these massive masts and the hugely increased power output of them. Of course, these are microwaves coming out of there. Most of us know that you don't stick your head in a microwave oven, or you don't even sit next to a microwave oven while it's on. We know that the effects of these things is to heat up cells and to heat up all sorts of material, actually, including water, etc. what was the atmosphere like down in London this week?
It was. I enjoyed the atmosphere. I went down for both days. Outside the court, there were a number of people holding banners, you know, protect us from 5G, stop 5G. And inside the courtroom, I think it was court number 73 at the Royal Courts of Justice, there were probably over 100 people crammed in there, all seats absolutely taken, people sitting on the floor, extra chairs were brought in. It was like a horseshoe shape, crowded around the barristers and right up to the judge. It was really, really packed out. People behaved themselves very, very well. And when the counsel for the government had the nerve to say there is no duty to provide information, the whole courtroom just burst into laughter. And the judge was, order, order, if you can't do this, you must behave yourselves, because you've got to give him a chance to make his point. But one aspect of concern for me was when Lady Stacey, Mary Stacey, made the comment about this no requirement to provide information, she referenced Andrew Wakefield, and she said, "We don't want to bring about an Andrew Wakefield situation," which kind of suggests she's probably more on the "we trust the government" rather than anybody else that goes against the government wavelength. So I'm not 100% confident this is going to go in favour of people opposing or wanting information about 5G being made mandatory, so the government has to give people information about the risks.
And what about after the case? Did you manage to sort of retire to a nearby hostelry?
We did. Quite a lot of us went. I had a good chat with Michael Mansfield as well after the case, just a general talk with him. I met some other barristers that I'd known for a long time, very senior barristers, also King's Counsel. Had a good talk with them, and again, brief discussion about what was happening. Their view was, and kind of off the record, so I'm not going to give their names, but it's very real and other people heard it, was that when you've got a government policy, it's unlikely the judge is going to go against it. So that's partly why I'm not too optimistic. But yes, a lot of us did go to the local pub, and the Jort pub opposite, and we had a good discussion for 4 or 5 hours. And it was very refreshing to talk with people that also had concerns, because you don't always meet them. And yeah, it was a very enjoyable experience.
Well,
overall,
there is something sort of perverse and surreal, almost absurd, about the idea that the government is just simply there to defend an industry which is potentially causing enormous harm, and it's left to ordinary citizens, like a bunch of people from Chiswick, to try and face them down in court. I mean, it's surely the government, the government departments, the people we pay their wages and taxes, they should be the arbiters here, between the people and the industry, not actually taking one side entirely.
You're absolutely right, but it's the worst thing. But another bad thing about this is that the people bringing the case had to raise £250,000 to pay for the case, and a lot of the money was used actually to try to even get this to court, because the government blocked, would keep on blocking the case from even reaching the court, and they had to go to the Court of Appeal to get the Court of Appeal to approve even this hearing. So it absorbs a lot of private money, a lot of individuals' money, but yet when the government's defending this, it's the taxpayer that's paying for it.
Well, I mean, it's almost like they're doing this for the industry. Now, the industry, let me have a look at some of the FTSE 100 companies on the telecoms industry. These people are minted billions, in fact, many of them millions and millions in profits. So for them, this is a drop in the ocean. But they're not even paying for it. We are, through the government.
Correct. Absolutely correct. All this is wrong. We're both on the same sort of page for this. It's scandalous that we're actually funding this. But that's how it works, because the industry is partly funding the research to say that it's safe. That's also problematic. But yet the government wants the policy of actually having 5G. So you've got this what you call a public-private partnership, unofficial, when it comes to 5G, and both people want it, and the poor individual, the taxpayer, is just going to go along with it, and he's not going to be given the full picture. That's what I find just wrong, not to be given the pros and cons of something and people being able to make a rational decision, because it really is manipulation of people using their money to manipulate them.
It's called Action Against 5G. Robert Hanson, I know you've just not long come back from Hong Kong. Any thoughts of returning yet?
Possibly. I always loved living in Hong Kong. It was the best place ever for 20 years, because it was such a free society. Believe it, I know it's under communism, but it was a free society. The government didn't really interfere with life too much until the COVID thing came along. At the moment, they've lifted just about all the restrictions, so there's no vaccination requirement anywhere to go anywhere. You don't have to check in anywhere or prove you've been vaccinated.
And this is a result of massive public demonstrations, which many of us never thought we'd see in China.
It is. I mean, it's what's amazing about this 5G is that, sorry, about the COVID thing, is that there were protests in China, and then COVID brought an end to it because it scared people into accepting lockdowns because of they were really scared of this COVID. And then it's lasted 2.5, nearly 3 years now. And then people then really protested in mainland China against the lockdown. And suddenly COVID disappeared.
Well, anyway, I wish you all the best. Robert Hansen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.